If you have your Bibles, let's turn to the book of Mark. Book of Mark, chapter 4. We'll read verses 21 to 25. Mark chapter 4, verse 21 says, "And he, being Jesus, he said unto them, Is a candle brought to be put under a bushel or under a bed, and not to be set on a candlestick? For there is nothing hid which shall not be manifested, neither was anything kept secret, but that it should come abroad. If any man have ears to hear, let him hear. And he said unto them, Take heed what ye hear. With what measure you meet, it shall be measured to you. And unto you that hear shall more be given. For he that hath, to him shall be given. And he that hath not, from him shall be taken, even that which he has." I'm going to begin this morning by giving you a little pop quiz. I'll ask you a question, and I don't want anybody to answer out loud. I'm going to ask for a show of hands if you know the answer. So don't be whispering it or telling your neighbor or saying it out loud. We want to see how many people can pass the test, all right? So if you know the answer to this question, just raise your hand, all right? The question is this. I'm going to begin the first few words or a phrase or two of a well-known speech that was given, and if you know who gave this speech, and I'm just going to say five or six words, raise your hand, all right? Okay, here's the phrase. 67 years ago. Okay, keep your hands up. If you know who said that, raise your hand. Okay, somebody tell us who said it. Abraham Lincoln. All right, next question. What was the occasion of this speech that Abraham Lincoln gave? If you know the answer to that, raise your hand. What do you notice difference about the hands? Fewer hands, right? Okay. A lot of us, probably almost two-thirds of the people in the room knew who said that. But only about half of you or less, maybe one-third, can tell the occasion. Who knows the occasion? You're absolutely sure you know what it was. All right, I'm going to call my granddaughter since she's here. What is it, Caitlin? The Civil War? All right. Let's get a little more specific. Can anybody get any more specific than that? Gettysburg? Dedication to a cemetery? Dedication to a cemetery after the Civil War. Does anybody disagree with that? You disagree? All right, is that close? Okay. I knew it had something to do with Gettysburg. It's called the Gettysburg Address. That's why I knew that. I knew Abraham Lincoln said it. I knew it involved the Civil War. I knew it involved the battlefield and all of that, the people that died. But I wasn't exactly sure of the minute details. Okay, let me give you another one. This one a little more modern. Who said this statement? Again, if you know it, raise your hand. Ask not. Y'all anticipating, aren't you? Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. Who said that? If you know it, raise your hand. Okay, somebody tell me. John F. Kennedy. Okay. What was the occasion of that statement? If you know that, raise your hand. Three of us in that group. Okay, Ray, what was it? Inauguration speech. Is that right? Okay, I thought it was on the campaign trail. I didn't. The inauguration of President Kennedy to the President of the United States. All right, and here's the thing I want to point on make by that, is there are a lot of these little phrases that we have become familiar with, and they have a word for those things. They're called orphan phrases. Is that we remember the statement. But as time goes on, it begins to be separated from its context. And we may know the saying, but we may not have a clue what the context that it was given in. It's called an orphan phrase. Okay? Jesus, there are a lot of these of sayings that Jesus said that would be could be classified, I would imagine, as orphan sayings. Okay, now let's not worry about whether or not they're orphan sayings, but what is a statement, a phrase that could be 3 words to 10 words that you can think of that Jesus said? Somebody tell me one. Judge not, that you be not judged. Somebody said, I heard a few years ago on a tape that that is the most quoted verse nowadays. It surpassed John 3:16. You can imagine why we would want to remember that one. You know, don't judge me. I do what I want, right? Judge not that you be not judged. You heard that one? Jesus said that. What's the context of that? Do you know that? Okay, some of us would. Okay, what's another saying that you're familiar with that Jesus said? I am the way, the truth, and the life. Okay, tell me another one. Okay, Christy, what'd you say? All right, who else said something? Caitlin, what'd you say? All right, that's in Psalms, actually. That comes from Psalms. Okay, what's another one Jesus said? I'm come to have life, and you might have it more abundantly. You should know the truth. The truth should make you free. Forgive them for they know not what they do. That's a good one on the cross, right? All right? A lot of these things, these phrases that we're familiar with that came from the lips of Jesus, yet I would imagine the same thing would be true if we were to ask ourselves what was the context of some of these sayings that we're familiar with. Some of them we may know the context, but some we may not. And that's what we call those orphan phrases. Today in our text, and this is what the point I'm making to get to this, is we're just reading 5 verses here. And there are 4 things that are said here in these 5 verses that may be classified as orphan phrases that Jesus gave. And here's the possibilities I want you to think about. Here in the book of Mark, is it that Jesus is standing for a group of people or sitting around with people or whatever, wherever he is at, is he saying these things all just like they are right here in the text? Or is Mark telling us, here are some things that Jesus said? Okay, now the reason I say that, if you look back in the first of chapter 4, Mark chapter 4, you see in verse 1, Jesus begins to teach by the seaside. There's gathered unto him a multitude of people, and so he begins to teach. He taught them many things by parable, and then you see the parable of the sower. And that goes on through verse 20. Verse 21 says, and he said unto them, verse 24, he said unto them, verse 26, he said, verse 30, he said, and it goes on. All right? Now, each of these 4 statements that are in our text this morning are found in other places in the gospel, but they're not together. They're separated. For instance, the very first one is a candle brought to be put under a bushel on verse 21, or under a bed, is it not to be put on a candlestick? You can turn to Matthew chapter 5 and find that same idea, that same thought, that same saying, but in a context. You're the light of the world. A city that's set on a hill cannot be hid. You don't take a candle and put it under a bushel. You're the salt of the earth. And he goes on in the Sermon on the Mount. That's the context of verse 21. Verse 22, there's nothing hid, but should not be made manifest. There's anything kept secret that should not come abroad. That's given to us in Matthew chapter 10, verse 26. But it's given to us in a context. You can see the same thing in verses 24 and verses 25. The standard that whatever you measure, you meet, shall be measured to you again. And to him that has shall be given. And he that hath not will be taken even what he has. is found in Matthew 13, and the standard measure in Matthew 7. So the question that I ask myself, okay, is, are these four things, are these four sayings meant to be in a context, but meant to be given together as a whole in saying one point? And I don't think that's the case. I think as we look at these four things today, we can take them individually and not try to be tying them to one another. All right? And I'm going to go even a little different route and say that they are pairs. The first two kind of go together with contrasting with each other, and the last two we will put together contrasting with one another. All right? So let's look at the first two, verses 21 and 22. Let me read them again. Is a candle brought to be put under a bushel, under a bed, and not to be set on a candlestick? For there is nothing hid which shall not be manifested, neither was anything kept secret, but that it should come abroad. If any man have ears to hear, let him hear. Verse 21, he says, do you buy a candle and then put it under a bushel? Do you turn on a light and then cover it up? That is not the purpose of a light. Okay, and here's the first point. The glory of truth is its illuminating powers. The glory of truth is its illuminating powers. Now, I want you to notice the statements that I have there. Truth is meant to be seen. I don't know that, and I'm making a pretty exclusive statement, I don't know that it matters in what area the truth is. Truth is meant to be seen. Scientific information is given to be declared. In a courtroom, truth on a witness stand is meant to be heard. Truth is meant to be seen. The glory of truth is that it reveals, it illuminates, it gives us information. Truth is meant to instruct. Truth is meant to instruct. It is meant to show us how to live, to show us how to make decisions. Truth is meant to distinguish. That is, to distinguish between truth and error. To distinguish between A and B. To distinguish between a good path and a better path. And truth is to be embraced, yet perhaps at a great price. History gives us full accounts of people who have paid a price for embracing truth. I want you to listen to me just a minute. Everyone listen. All the kids listen. There are going to be times in your life, plenty of times in your life, where you are going to have to decide which path you are going to take. You're going to have to decide between one thing and another. And the difference that it's going to make, that you need to realize, is how is it that you make that decision? Decide to go with truth. It matters not to me. I would like to think that it would matter not to me whether I went this direction and that direction. I want to know what is right. When our kids are growing up, and my child may have a conflict with your child, who do I side with? I decide, or at least I should. I'm not interested in which is my child and which is your child. I want to know what is right. If my child is in the wrong, he's in the wrong. we decide and make decisions, and we embrace not someone because we love them. We embrace something because it is right, because it is true. The glory of truth is its illuminating powers. The second point, sort of a contrast to this, the power of truth is its indestructible nature. Copernicus lived in the early 1500s. Copernicus, some of you may remember from your either science class or history class, I'm not sure which, maybe both. Copernicus discovered a truth. Copernicus discovered something that was right. And the glory of what he discovered was its magnificence in the heavens. But Copernicus kept what he discovered to himself for 30 years. What was it that Copernicus discovered? The earth revolves around the sun, not the sun around the earth. Now, why would Copernicus not declare that truth? Fear. He was afraid. Who was it that he was afraid of? The church. As he was nearing death, I have read, on his deathbed, I think it was in 1543 or something like that, he convinced a terrified printer to publish his work. I think it's called Revelations of the Heavenly Bodies or something like that. On his deathbed. A few years later, Galileo took up that cause. Galileo was called in by the church on heresy. What did Galileo do? He caved in. He recanted. A few years later, the Roman Catholic Church had a new Pope, Urban VIII, I believe is his name, who Galileo was thought was a little more open to new discoveries and new things. And so Galileo brought forth this truth again. He was wrong. Again, he recanted and saved himself from death, but not from prison. Martin Luther spoke against this truth. Today, we understand, and it's not that these people were backward and ignorant. Perhaps they were without knowledge. But we can easily understand how the earth can revolve around the sun and that not be a contradiction to whatever the Bible may say. Martin Luther said in opposition to that truth that Joshua commanded the sun to stand still, not the earth. Truth. It doesn't matter who opposed it, the truth stayed the same, didn't it? Andrew Melville made this statement: "It lies not within your power to hang or exile the truth." Notice what he's saying. He says, "You do not have the ability. No man has the ability to hang the truth." To kill it, in other words, to destroy it. It is not within your power to destroy the truth. And he said, it's not in your power also to exile the truth. In other words, you can't take it and put it over here somewhere where nobody can see it, where it can't be found, and be successful in doing that. You do not have the power to do that. The truth. Truth is indestructible. It may be attacked. It may be hated, It may be suppressed, it may be mocked, it may be delayed or held back, but in the end, truth will prevail. Did you get that? In the end, truth will prevail. In the end, truth will prevail. We ought to, because of that, we ought to take care that we do not fight against the truth. Take care that you are not suppressing the truth. Take care that you do not embrace something that you know not to be true. Because in the end, truth will prevail. The context of this thought that is given in Matthew 10:26. Look at it here in Mark, verse 22. Mark chapter 4, verse 22. There is nothing hid which shall not be manifested, neither is anything kept secret that should it come abroad. Now I want you to turn with me to Matthew chapter 10, and let's see the context in which that is given there. Matthew chapter 10. Now, verse 26 says, "Fear not them, therefore. There is nothing covered that shall not be revealed, and hid that shall not be made known." All right, now look at the context. Go back to verse 16. "Behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. Be wise as serpents, harmless as doves. Beware of men, for they will deliver you up to councils. They will scourge you in the synagogues. You'll be brought before governors and kings for my sake, a testimony against them and the Gentiles. But when they deliver you up, take no thought what you shall speak. It will be given you in that hour what you shall speak. For it is not you that speak, but the Spirit of your Father which speaks in you. And the brother shall deliver up brother to death, and the father the child. The children shall rise up against their parents and cause them to be put to death. And you'll be hated of all men for my name's sake. But he that endureth to the end shall be saved. But when they persecute you in this city, flee to another. For verily I say unto you, you shall not go through over all the cities of Israel till the Son of Man be come. The disciple is not above his master, nor the servant above his Lord. It is enough for the disciple that he be as his master, and the servant as his Lord. They have called the master of the house Beelzebub. How much more should they call them of his household?" Then he says, "Fear not them. There is nothing covered up that won't be revealed." In other words, he is saying here, you are a follower of me. You are my disciple. You have embraced truth. And there may come a day, and he's telling them, you may face the day where you will be delivered up to councils. You will be delivered up to be persecuted and to be killed and to be martyred because of the truth. And he told them in that context, someday the truth will prevail. It may look like to you that the truth is being suppressed. It may look like to you that you are being persecuted and you may be being persecuted and killed and the truth being demolished. But that's not the case. There is nothing that they can do to cover this up that someday will not be revealed. There's nothing hidden that will not be made manifest. That's the second one. The third one, in verse back in Mark chapter 4, verse 24. The third point is this, that gains for the wise steward is based on acting on what you hear. You see that phrase there right in the middle of our verse this morning, verse 23. "If any man have ears to hear, let him hear." You'll see that phrase several times in the New Testament. If any man have ears to hear, let him hear. What does that mean? Do you have ears to hear? Everybody in here probably got ears. A couple of them. So if you have ears to hear, then we do. Let him hear. That's not what he's saying. He's saying, if you have the ability, if you have the tendency, if you have the God-given grace to pay attention to what's being told to you, to acknowledge it, if you have a teachable spirit, if you are not a scorner, you will hear. All of us have ears to hear, but not everyone hears. All of us have ears to hear, but not everyone listens. Right? If you have ears to hear, let him hear. And then he says in verse 24, take heed what you hear. In other words, act upon it. What you understand, act upon it. The truth that you understand to be true, act upon that. And the result is gain. With what measure you meet or with the degree that you give, then that same degree will be measured to you again. Gains come from investing. Blessings come from blessing. Blessings come to us as we bless others. Getting comes from giving. I don't like that way that's worded, but that's kind of a crass way of saying this. And the last point I'll leave to you is resources are multifaceted. Gains. How much have you invested in other people? You know, I'm not an old guy. To some of you, I am. But I don't seem like that I'm not old. But I've seen a lot of people kind of come and go. And I have seen people that for some reason never are able to give. I don't mean in the offering plate. I mean give of themselves and not only not expecting anything in return, but not anticipating anything in return, just give. And here's some of the times I've noticed this. Here's what has happened. They are too heavily in debt to spare any cash to give. They are living from paycheck to paycheck and have every dime that they make obligated. If they miss a day of work because of sickness, they're in the hole. They are not able to give because of their financial situation. They're not able to give of their time because it requires everything that they have. All of their time is spoken for the same reasons. They are not able to do it. And they will. It seems like they never, ever will develop the discipline to order their lives in such a way that they can give. They're always just on the getting end. But I've seen other people who were not able to give money. And they knew they weren't able to give money, but they were able to give time. And I've seen those people give. They are just as big givers as somebody who has resources. What resources do you have to give? Gains come from giving. Whatever measure you use in giving, that's the same measure that will be used to you in giving to you. Then the contrast of that is number four. Loss for the foolish steward only requires a passive or negligent nature. loss for the foolish steward only requires a passive or negligent nature. Notice the statements there. Being responsible brings more ability and opportunity to be responsible. If you are an employer and you're looking for someone to do a job, and you look out over the 10 or 15 people that are available for you to put in a responsible position, who do you choose? You choose a person who you view to be responsible. The very trait that you need in this position, you look for it in the person to fill it. Right? And when that person is placed in that responsible position, and he is there, then it makes him even more attractive to even more responsible positions. So the more character a person has, the more opportunities he has to display and to build on that character. It's that way in our worship. When we come to worship, we come to give. Or do we come to get? Giving or getting? Let me give you a little rule of thumb. If you are a type of person who finds fault with things in the church, the worship service, let's say, then more than likely you are coming to get, not to give. If I come to give worship to God, I'll find a way to give it. But if I come to get, if I come to get something, anything that may hinder my getting will frustrate me. Being responsible, giving, getting, gaining knowledge brings even more knowledge. I thought of a story that happened in my life a few years ago. When I was in high school, I took Spanish. I don't know if it was one semester or one year. I think it would have been one full year of Spanish. I got about a week's worth out of it, but it was a year. It took me a year to get it. I took Spanish 1. I knew a lot of Spanish words. I could conjugate a verb in Spanish. That's pretty good, isn't it? But I never had the opportunity or the desire to develop and to maintain my Spanish. So what happens? That which I had was taken from me. That's what this verse says. The person who is negligent, who does not use his abilities, even the things that he has, he will lose them. I didn't speak Spanish. I didn't have the opportunity to. Really didn't care. And now I know gracias and adios. And uno, dos, tres. Right? I remember a few years ago, we were at a job. And of course, you know, nowadays there's a lot of Hispanics around. And, you know, there will be 3 or 4 Hispanics. One of them will speak English, and he's the spokesman for the group, you know. And they were working on a house next to where we were building a house. And this one guy came over and was talking at us. All right? And he was saying something. And I don't know why. Stephen McDaniel was working with us at the time. And Stephen had been to Guatemala. And I don't know why I thought Stephen knew Spanish. This Hispanic guy was, you know, looking at me and saying all this stuff. And I knew it had something to do with this board here. There's a 2x12, about 16 foot 2x12 laying there. I knew it had something to do with that board because he's looking at the board and pointing and saying the stuff. I didn't know if he wanted to cut a piece of the board off or if he wanted to know if I had a board. So I turned to Stephen and I said, "Stephen, what does he say?" And here's what Stephen did. "You want board?" I remember thinking to myself, good grief, I could have done that, you know. I just, inside, I was just laughing. Like, why did I think he knew Spanish? Just because he'd been to Guatemala on a mission trip? Has he? I've noticed Don Tibbett, and I don't know, I'm not an expert on how much Spanish Don knew 10 years ago and how much he knows now, but I bet it's more now, isn't it? A little bit more? Luis, same way. And the reason is because they cultivated that gift. They made it a priority to get better in that regard. All right? But lack of use of things that we have, if we are not a steward, a good steward of the things that we have, if we neglect them, if we just have a passive attitude toward them, then they'll be taken from us. Just by default. All right? These are four statements that Jesus makes here in Mark chapter 4. I trust that you will hear these things and that God will show you how you can use them in your life. Let's pray. Father, some things are so common to us. Some things are so much a part of our everyday life that we don't give them much thought. But Father, I pray that you would help us, Lord, to, first of all, to understand how important truth is. Lord, my commitment to truth is more important than my friendship with someone else. My embracing what is right should be a high, high priority in my life. God, I pray for these people who are here. And God, I pray for these kids that are in school that are sitting here this morning. God, that as they face decisions, you would bring this back to their minds. What is right? What is truth? God, give them the grace to recognize it. And Lord, to embrace it, even if it cost. God, the truths that you have given us, God, may we be good stewards of them. God, make us, allow us to be faithful and good servants of yours. Amen.